Your first time to a Buddhist center ever?
No, I've been coming to the Sunday meditation for about a month now.
Okay.
And also for the 10:30 to 12 o'clock sections.
Okay. This is, we use the mics because we actually record these classes, and so it's good when people can talk. And I already made everybody else introduce themselves, too. My name is Sandy. You are?
My name is Julio.
Julio. Very nice to meet you. So you have a little bit of familiarity with Buddhism?
Yes, I do.
Okay, perfect. And now, sir, in the back, we have another new visitor.
My name is Tyler.
Hi, Tyler.
Hi. This is my first time to a Buddhist center.
First time to it. So may I ask what brings you here tonight? Just curiosity? Sometimes I have students from world religion classes.
Yeah, it's a combination of curiosity, and I have to write a paper on my experience here. So.
Okay. I hope it's not due tomorrow morning.
No.
Okay.
Next Monday.
Good. You've got time. Honestly, I have. I've seriously had students come in, and I got four kids, so I totally get it. But it's like they've got a paper due in the morning and it couldn't get that. So, well, welcome to the center. Hope you enjoy it. You've actually stepped into the fourth class of a five-class module. So it's not the deep end of the pool because this is Buddhism in a nutshell and we don't have a deep end of the pool. We are still in the kiddie pool, okay? But we're wading, okay? We're about waist deep now. So you'll be able to, I think, understand where we're going because we'll do a bit of a review. But I would recommend that if you're going to look at this any deeper, that some of the stuff that we talked about at the beginning was very much kind of the nuts and bolts of things that you can find in any Buddhist book, just like when the Buddha lived, when he died, the fact that he was a man and not a god. So you can find some of those details in the Buddhism in a Nutshell book that is out there that we have based this class on. You can also find it just about any, you can even, you know, wiki it, Google it. So the first couple of classes were basically on some of the details in the history of Buddhism. And now we're getting into some more of the concepts of Buddhism. And this course is really based on a very lower level, just making sure we're all on the same page and let's get some of these basic concepts. And we're going to talk more at the end of this class and the next class about what some of the next steps are and what Kanapa Center has to offer so that if you choose to find out more information and go a little bit further along this path for whatever reason, we've got lots of different opportunities and different directions for you to go to and to look at. I'm going to go ahead and take the mic again. I am going to do two commercials tonight real quick because we have several very, very great opportunities coming up. One of them, and I don't have all of the dates on these things, but they're outside listed. Karuna Caton, the author of The Misleading Mind, Karuna Caton, who has been a practicing Buddhist for decades and decades. He's not going to like me saying that he's that old. But he is a very, very, very long-term practitioner who also studied with Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe, the founders of the FPMT. He's coming to Raleigh, and he will be teaching here in Raleigh, right here at Kanapa Center. And we have the dates out there. This is somebody that even as beginners and as people that don't have a lot of basis and stuff. I mean, he's good for anybody, okay? So he's phenomenal. He's coming to the center. We also have, if anybody's interested in actually volunteering and helping, because, again, I've talked about the fact that we're all mostly volunteers here. 99.9% of us are volunteers at the center. And even the staff that we have get paid like this much. Actually, sometimes I think they pay to work here. But there's a phenomenal opportunity to learn from somebody that has been studying for decades with some of the highest teachers that we have. So he's going to be here teaching. And then we also have the author of Buddhism for Dummies. John Lando is coming here. Jonathan Lando is coming here to the center and will be teaching a lot of different subjects. Okay, so he's even going to go into, there's one class that I'm absolutely going to come to for sure, is the Buddhist symbolism. Okay, even though I know a lot, there's always different levels and stuff too to learn from. And anytime these visiting teachers come, I try to take the opportunity and the time off to come. The author of this here book that I talk about all the time is coming here. I'm going to have him sign mine. So, but there's more to come. Check on the Kadapa Center website so you can get the dates. You can see the actual teachings. So there's a specific subject that you want to come to, check it out. All right? So those are two commercials for you there. Okay, so again, as always, before, if I'm over here, I'm not moving. is that battery? I got nothing. My phone's off. If this starts squeaking on us, I'm going to put it there. But if I get up and walk and it crashes, it's not my fault. So as always, we're going to take a minute to settle our minds and do just a brief meditation to get started. And as I've always said, this is as much for my benefit as it is for yours. Things get a little frazzling during my days, and so I like to just settle down. What meditation did we end with last time? Mind like the sky, I think? Okay. So again, what I'm trying to do, because meditation is kind of that pillar of what we work with in Buddhism, because it's a way to work with our mind. What I'm doing is I just want to do just these brief introductory meditations with you, just to give you a taste of it. Some of you may have been meditating and doing different types of meditation for a long time, but these are specific meditations, concentration meditations, again, concentration meditation, analytical meditation, that gives us the ability to work with our mind. So I'm trying to end with a new meditation and then start the next class with the same meditation, so you've got a chance to do two. What I really like to do today, if you guys are up to it, if we can wing through some of the stuff today, is perhaps end a little bit earlier and then take you through a concentration meditation and then an analytical meditation, so you can actually see how the two work together. Okay? I'm going to work toward ending early if possible. Next week is our last class, so it's our last time together. And if I can, I talk fast, y'all know that, so I can move us along. But that's what I'd like to try to do, because I'd like to end with the opportunity for you guys to try just a taste of an analytical meditation so you really get the idea of it. And then we can talk about it a little bit more next time and get through the rest of the class and the information that I'd like to share. Okay, so again, I'll kind of leave that up to you. We'll take a vote at the end to see if you all want to keep going with the information and the concepts that we're talking on, or if you want to try the analytical. But for right now, so let's clear our minds. And if everybody's comfortable with that 7-point meditation posture, again, there's nothing holy about sitting on a cushion. There's nothing holy about the way that you hold your hands and your body. It is specifically common sense to help you keep a stable position for long periods of time so that you can focus on your mind and not your body. So sit comfortably on your seat or cushion with your back straight. Focus your attention on your breathing and breathe naturally. Perhaps use one of the breathing meditations that we've learned to settle our mind and bring it to a state of deeper focus and concentration and ready to engage in meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for the meditation session and think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. Again, that's that Mahayana motivation. So let's start by practicing bare attention. When you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, loosen your concentration slightly. Emphasize the element of mindfulness in your meditation a little bit more strongly. and allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Don't identify with the mental elements that are arising. Simply observe them like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. Allow your mindful attention to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience of consciousness. Forget that there is an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky, completely clear, vast, spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience and identify with the experience, clarity, spaciousness, and awareness. Our minds are completely clear just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through the clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shines through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds, and the sky doesn't judge. Clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware, spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea or an image, a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it. Let it arise and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, just like a cloud. Your mind, the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we lose the awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within each thought or feeling. Our perspective becomes small and constricted, and it's as if all there are clouds and we've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress, without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversions. Just take a few minutes and identify with the sky and let the thought clouds just pass through. And now let's do a dedication. Let's dedicate that all the positive energy that you've created through this practice of mindful meditation to becoming a better and better person, who's more at peace in life, who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. Bring your attention back to the room. Thank you. So that meditation, there's two, and I'll try to do the other one next week, where mind is like the ocean. So part of that is just trying to identify the mind with that space. And for some reason, and again, this is, you guys have to figure out what works for your mind. For me, there's going to be another meditation that we do next week that I seem to work a little bit better with, mind like the ocean. For some reason, it's the same thing, only you're using water and the ocean and fish going through. But for some reason, the water maybe being something more touchable, for want of a better word, I can really get that feeling of the water and the ocean and the vastness. The sky, it works for me when I kind of picture myself laying down on a hill and have that open view of just that clear blue sky. We have these in North Carolina where there isn't a cloud in the sky. So you can kind of get that perception and that feeling going if you can kind of go with that a little bit. Is anybody trying to do any of these meditations at home during the week? Would anybody care to share the experience of how this is working or not? Or maybe some of the obstacles or what's working for you, what isn't working, which ones you're liking? Anybody want to? Is there one that you're liking better than the other? I'm just curious because I'll share where I'm at.
I've done a meditation practice for about 3 years, and I've been doing breath meditations with counting in and counting out, one, two.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried the meditation where you just count each breath, start over when you lose, when you, and it's a subtle difference.
Yep.
But I try the starting over and really saying, okay, you know, I know you're meditating, I know you're counting, and I know you want to do this, you know, and be disciplined and everything. But the subtlety of starting over again, it has changed it a little bit for me.
In a way, maybe being more aware or in a negative way?
No, more on, it's a, the subtlety is making it less like a thing that you have to do and build yourself up.
Okay.
And if you're honest with yourself and say, well, you know, I drifted.
Yeah, I got to start over. Nobody else is in the room. Nobody else is in the mind. Yeah.
It's more like you have a little more compassion for yourself.
Thank you.
Because my introduction to meditation was Zen, and my feeling was it's very, very, I want to be fair. Like, it's very serious.
They're all good.
Yeah,
it's
very serious. You sit straight, you know, and you count and you do this, and this focuses on the form. But that's good.
Yep.
But I think, like, sort of seeing the self-compassion aspect of it is a good thing too.
So I'm going to touch on this because it's phenomenal to me. So all of these different practices, all of these different, whether it's Zen, whether it's, you know, pick a type of Buddhism, pick Hinduism, pick anything. It doesn't matter. What is going to work for your mind? And so if we narrow it down to just the different aspects of Buddhism, and again, that's kind of how we talk, they all are good. Okay? They all have the same core. They're just going to come at it from a different point of view, and they're just going to come at it from a little bit slightly different focus. And so what works for you, sir, may not work for him. And may not work for you. And you may think totally different, and you may match me. Okay, there's 84,000 teachings of the Buddha. All right? And there's basically 84,000 different types of minds, if not more. Okay? So all of these teachings, some of them even sometimes seem like they contradict each other, but they don't. It just depends on where your mind is and what is going to work for you. So you bring up two points that I think are really good to talk about, and that is that the different types of Buddhism, they're not, one's not better, one's not worse. One may work better for you, and one may work better for you, and it's up to you guys to figure it out, okay? The Buddha, just because the Buddha says it, doesn't mean that you have to believe it. Just because Sandy says it in class, it's true. Everything from a Buddhist perspective and from the Buddha is that you don't believe it just because he says it. This is not about blind faith at all. This is about here are these methodologies, here's this way that you can look at life, that you can look at some of these big questions, and you work at it. And if something that the Buddha says you discover is not true, then you must reject it. Okay? So there is no blind faith in Buddhism. It's you check it out, you take these teachings, you try them. The only thing that we ask is that you try them honestly. Be honest with yourself. There's nobody else in there with you. Be honest with yourself and try them. And if it works for you, great. If it doesn't, put it aside and try something else. Okay? There's lots of things to try here. The other thing that you said that I really want to stress, and we're actually going to talk about it tonight, is that self-compassion. Okay? Now, think about it this way. We are so good about being compassionate for others. We're all pretty good at that, right? Naturally, you feel for other people. You want to help other people. We very seldom turn that compassion to ourselves. I'm not talking about self-pity. I'm not talking about the whining that I am very good at doing. Okay, I'm talking about true self-compassion. And it's an interesting struggle with your mind when you actually try to turn it and do that. And I was really pleased that you actually came to it so quickly, and perhaps it's the working with the Zen, perhaps it's the awareness, I don't know, but to come to that awareness of being compassionate with yourself, we don't do that enough, especially in our Western society. Especially in our Western society. We are not, it's not even in our concept. And do you know that's one of the biggest things that the Dalai Lama struggled when he was really trying to kind of be opened up to the West? He didn't understand how we cannot be self-compassionate. It wasn't even in his realm of thinking. He didn't understand that we didn't understand it. I don't understand why you don't understand me. It's not in our culture. And it's a shame. So we have to actually work on that. I'm not talking about self-esteem. I'm not talking about, you know, there's a big difference, and we maybe do some practices on this and some things that I can come with next time to help you discover the difference between that self-pity and the victimization that we tend to do in the West that we go along with to a true self-compassion. It's a big subject for us, so I'm just really pleased that you even brought that up. That was good. So, anybody else? Anybody doing the red light thing at all? Anybody come up with any other triggers or mindfulness things? I'm going to have you use the mic.
Oh, sorry.
When people do not use their turn signals.
Okay.
That puts me in a uproar. So I've been trying. I catch myself. I'm like, oh, no, step back. And I then calm myself of, you know, maybe they just, For whatever reason, I don't even know, but, you know, and then I realized that I tell myself that, like, no one got hurt, you know, they didn't cut me off,
yep.
So it's
but
all good.
See, it's a trigger, isn't it?
It's
an awareness.
Huge trigger,
and yeah. And you know, and so what really gets even funnier, now I'm going to give you another one,
okay.
Because you're doing that one, okay? So now do the one that, because you cannot tell me that 100% of the time you use your blinker. Maybe even 99.
I would say I would say 99%, 98%
okay.
Of the time.
So it's really interesting. There's nothing worse than when you realize I do that.
Well,
go ahead.
Psychologically, what happens is we project mm-hmm. on other people's faults is because, one, we know that we have that personality
exactly.
trait and we don't like it about ourselves.
Yep.
Or, two, we don't know that we have that, and subconsciously, that's why we are we get more
yes.
on top of other people that are.
So
in
that
yeah.
is actually another practice.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another practice that's yep. really good. That what you get frustrated at in other people, mm-hmm. if you stop and are really against it, and do some of these analytical meditations on that one now, And, oh, I love and hate that one at the same time because it's what I need. But just sit down and be honest with yourself. And it's like, this person is really bugging me. And then when you realize, rather than looking at what they're doing, be aware of when you're doing it too.
Especially when it comes to people that you love.
Yep.
Your relationships, your friendships, your romantic relationships. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the hardest. Those are the hardest because you love them, but at the same time, you understand why.
So I can give you one little trigger for this, okay? So she's talking about, and this is an easy one, okay? So how many times do we get frustrated with that person that we love, okay? I'm going to give you personal experience here, okay? My husband loves the fact that he's always in these classes, okay? So any time that I start to feel like I'm doing too much, don't we all feel that way? Oh, I'm doing everything. I'm doing everything. Mm-hmm. Don't we all do that? All right? So as soon as you feel that way, I want you to stop and start making a list of everything that other person does for you, everything that you can think about. I have coffee ready for me every single morning. Mm-hmm. I can start giving this list of everything they does down to, you know, I don't mow the lawn. I don't, you know, take care of the cars. I don't. So right when I start to feel like I do everything, I'll start that practice, and I'll start going through the list of everything my husband does for me, does for our household, does for our family, and then but within 5 minutes, not even that, I'd say within 30 seconds, I'm feeling, instead of frustrated with him, I'm thinking, oh, I've got to do more. So try it as a serious practice. The next time you think that you're the one that does everything, start making the list. Now, if you go through and you can't come up with a bunch of stuff, then y'all have something to work on, don't you? So I'm not going to say that it always happens that way, but if you're honest about it, mm-hmm. there's probably a lot of things that other person, that child, that husband, that significant other, mm-hmm. that friend does, that in that moment we're not thinking of because we're frustrated and we have the eye involved. So good triggers. Mm-hmm. But again, these are all about more awarenesses. Anybody else have anything? Any questions about anything we've discussed? Trying to think of the emails that I've received. I think I've replied to just about everybody. And we'll talk later. Okay. Okay. Let's try to get through some of these things then, because we're going to try to stop early. So help me watch the time. I'd like to try to stop about 8:10, give us 20 minutes. For the analytical. We'll do a concentration and analytical, and I'd like to give some time for it. Okay, so tonight we're going to go through, so here's another awareness, because I don't often listen to myself on these tapes, and I've had to go back and listen because I haven't led this class in like 2 years, and I'm discovering how often I say, okay, yeah, I'm so sorry, that has got to get really irritating. I know. It's just this, okay, all right, so whatever I do to, you know, affirm that we're done, I've got to try to work on that one. I didn't realize I said that so much. So tonight, we'll do a brief review, and we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about karma in this review, okay? I'm going to go just a little bit, because there were some good questions last time, so I'd like to try to work with that a little bit more, so we'll review on that. And then we're going to talk about precious human rebirth, the Buddhist view of death, the three scopes, and the three principal aspects of the path. This is part of that will take us back to the Four Noble Truths, because that will weave. We're going to be talking about that this whole class, and that will weave, again, throughout the class. And the three principal aspects of the path will help us define that Fourth Noble Truth. So that's where we're going to go. So, again, I'm gonna breeze through some of the stuff. If you've got a question, holler out and stop me, because I just want to do a brief review about everything to, again, get us to that same page so we can work on some of these things. Definition of the mind, non-physical, it is not the brain. Clear sky, clear lake, that meditation that we've had should help kind of understand that a little bit more. Aware, the six senses. Again, we talk about five in the Western world with sight, sound, smell, touch, taste. We have the mental awareness in our definition of the mind, and its function is to know. There's no beginning, and it is continually changing. And because of that, we have the ability to change our minds. We have the ability to transform our minds because of that very fact that this is continually changing. That gives us the ability. That's what Buddhism is all about. By changing our minds, because we have this ability, we think that we have the ability to create our own happiness because we can work with our minds. So we can eliminate the suffering. We can eliminate the obscurations. And we can create the causes of our own happiness. That is the basic core concept of Buddhism, that we can work with our minds to do that. How do we do it? We look at our mind. We study, we practice. What do we study? The Lam Rim, which again is the original Buddhist for Dummies. John Lendo's coming here. Okay. That Lam Rim, what they've done is they took all of the Buddhist teachings and they kind of incorporated them into a lesson plan to make it easier to understand. And just about everything that you learn here at the center, okay, any of the classes that we have, whether it's discovering Buddhism, whether it's the basic program, whether it's the Lam Rim, specifically the Lam Rim on Wednesday night, everything in there in all of our teachings basically will fall back into some part of that Lam Rim. Okay? And about the time that you think, oh, I've heard this before, I'll do this. Oh, I already know this. I've heard this before. It's going to start seeming very repetitive after a while. But you know what? It's repetitive because you're not getting it. Because there's so many different layers, and right about the time you think, I already know this, you hear something new, you hear something differently, something else will click into play. You'd probably agree with that, that all of a sudden something will happen that you'll hear a little bit differently. Steve? That you hear something a little bit differently? He's just kind of looking at me.
The Lam Rim, like a syllabus?
Basically, yeah. It is the graduated path. It's an organization of all the Buddhist teaching. Yeah, it's very similar to a syllabus when they start to break it down. In fact, it has already been kind of broken out like a syllabus. I have that copy. So, yeah. Okay, and it's a step-by-step graduated path. So that doesn't mean gradual path, that you take this step, you take this step, you take this, then you reach enlightenment that way. It means you're going to take this, you're going to take two steps forward, you're going to take three steps sideways, you're going to go over here, you're going to learn this, and you can learn many of these things simultaneously. So it's not this gradual path, it's a graduated path, if that makes sense. So here's my commercial for Jonathan Landau. Seriously, there's going to be some great classes there. I'm excited that he's coming. I haven't had a chance to meet him yet. So what it means to be Buddhist, we talked about this, is where do we look for happiness? We're not looking outside. We're looking internally. Our happiness is not out there. It's not the new car. It's not the chocolate cake. Okay? It's not the big job. It's not the raise. That's not what causes our happiness. If that were true, if happiness were in that chocolate cake, then that chocolate cake would always cause happiness, right? For everybody. If that were true, then chocolate cake would make everybody happy all the time, correct? Well, what about the people that are allergic to chocolate? Doesn't work for them. How about if that chocolate cake, that first piece, tastes delicious, and that's my happiness. Man, I am loving that chocolate cake. By the fourth piece, I am sick of chocolate cake. I do not want the chocolate cake. By the tenth piece, I'm going to throw up. If happiness were in chocolate cake, it would be happy, it would be good all the time. Happiness is not out there. If that new car was happiness, okay, then it's only new for how long? So it's happiness is not in these possessions out there, and once you start to work with this, because if it was happiness out there, then all of these rich people in Hollywood, well, they have all the things for happiness, right? So what do we think is happiness from an outside perspective? So if you start thinking about it this way, where are you looking? So what it means to be Buddhist is we're looking in here. The six root delusions, we've talked about these a little bit. Negative mind, anger, attachment, pride, doubt, ignorance, wrong view. We're going to break a couple of these out in the next class so you can understand the wisdom of emptiness a little bit more. So we're going to go a little bit deeper into these anger and attachment. But it's looking at your mind. And again, the negative mind is something as simple as what happens with the red light, what happens when they don't use their blinkers, what happens when you're standing in the grocery line and the lady in front of you got 52 coupons. Everything has a cause. Because the mind is non-physical, it can only be produced by something non-physical. Each moment of mind is produced by a previous moment of mind, and this is that continuity of consciousness. And you can kind of work with this a little bit by thinking, what did I have for lunch today? What did I have for breakfast? Look at, I used food. I used food as a trigger. What is it? Obviously. But then think about something else if it doesn't work for you. That just is an easy way to do it. What did you do last birthday? What did you do the birthday before that? So find some events. You can follow this back. And that will kind of help you work with that concept of rebirth. From a Buddhist perspective, we're saying that these moments of mind can actually be taken back all the way through the womb to the life before us. That's the concept of rebirth. It's slightly different than this concept of reincarnation. Okay, the reincarnation gives you that feeling that Sandy's going to be still, there's an essence of Sandy back there in that life behind her. Okay, whereas we're saying in Buddhism that there isn't. I find that powerful, because that means that we really can change. Because if I was perfect, I'd be a Buddha. I'm not perfect. And so this thought that I have the ability to perhaps reach perfection, you know, I'm in. Mind moments, 65 mind moments in every snap of your fingers. Okay? So you can break that down. Okay? You can break that down by, I'm going to get up and go get a drink. So just breaking down that the thought process of all of a sudden, well, you're thirsty. So what that triggers, okay? You're thirsty. You have to think all of these things before you even go get that drink. So you have to tell your body to stand up. You got to tell your legs to move. You've got all these different things that happen, and all we think of is, I went and got a drink. So we're not even aware of all of these mind moments. We are aware of the gross mind moments. Okay, this upper level, and we might sometimes be a little aware of the subtle, okay? Sometimes some people might call it intuition. You might have different awarenesses of some things. The most subtle is that's that kernel of the mind that we're talking about, that's the part that actually goes through the rebirth. Okay, so that most subtle mind. We talked about following your memories back, breaking down those moments. We've talked about the awarenesses. So if once you have an awareness of your mind, you have the ability to work with it. Using the triggers, again, I'm trying to give you ideas on how to use this every day, gives you the opportunity to practice these things. Okay, samsara, that beginningless recurring cycle of death and rebirth under the control of karma. Now we're going to get into the karma a little bit. This is that cyclic existence. Karma means action, cause and effect. Positive actions produce happiness. Negative actions produce suffering. Again, we're going to talk about karma a little bit more because you guys had some good questions about this. Karma is a psychological process. There is no cosmic scoreboard. There's nobody out there tracking you. The four laws of karma. Karma is definite. Virtuous actions will always result in positive karma. Negative actions will always result in suffering. There's also neutral. Okay, there's a lot of neutral out there that just nothing happens. Okay, like when you're sleeping. Okay, that's all neutral. Karma expands over time, just like that pebble that's thrown in there and those ripples go out. You know what that's like when somebody has hurt your feelings. Okay, maybe they didn't mean to, but your feelings are hurt. You know how powerful that can grow. Okay, so same thing with it. Just a smile can make somebody feel so good. So you understand that concept of things expanding. That's karma expands over time. And there's no result without the cause. You will never experience a result without having you creating the cause. Okay, so You planted an acorn. That's gonna become an oak tree. That's not gonna be a pear tree. So whatever you plant is what's gonna grow. Karma is not lost. Actions will always produce a result unless the karmic imprints are purified or destroyed. We're going to get into some of this some more because you guys had some questions, again, that were good. So let's talk about that. Four aspects of karma: the ripening result, the possessed result, ripening result, what type of rebirth are you going to have, the possessed result, what type of environment are you born into, experiencing the results similar to the cause you're robbed because you stole from somebody in the past. Creating the results similar to the cause you steal now because you stole in the past. Habit energy. We all have habit energy. Okay? And if you start to be aware of it, you can actually start to recognize it. And then you can start to work with it. What are the 10 non-virtuous actions? We talked about this. And again, I'm going to get through this part and then let's have some more discussion about this. 10 non-virtuous actions with our body, with our speech, and with our mind. With the body, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, speech, lying, harsh speech, divisive speech, gossip, covetousness. With the mind, covetousness, anger, and wrong view. And again, we went through the details of, well, killing, we don't kill. You know, unless you're a hunter or a fisherman. Okay, that's killing. For those of us that eat meat, okay, we didn't kill, but we are eating meat. But those who are vegetarians, okay, there's also insects and other sentient beings that are killed, so we can't judge. But we're involved at some level with killing when we drive our cars here. Okay, insects are being killed. That's a little bit neutral because we didn't know. But we have an awareness of it, so we've got different levels. Again, we're going to talk about some of this stuff in a little bit deeper. Outside, slapping that mosquito, not even thinking about it. Okay, so we do kill. We just aren't thinking about it in the way that this overt, you know, murdering somebody, right? So let's break this out right now and talk about, again, I'm not going to go too deep here because discovering Buddhism, the fourth module, I think it's the fourth module, is karma. And so for the 6 weeks on Monday night, they can deep dive. You know, we've had, you know, what, a total of maybe an hour to talk about karma. And so you're not going to totally understand this. I'm just trying to get you to at least have a basic knowledge of it. But if you really want to deep, this is a huge, huge subject. There are great books around karma. I can recommend some, and if you're really interested in this, because this is what we work with, and once you understand this, it really helps to work with the mind. It helps to understand some things. It helps to lose some of this victimization that we can feel sometimes over some things happening. It's a phenomenal subject, and it deserves much more time than I can give you here. I'm just trying to go through some light things to understand. Again, this is Buddhism in a nutshell. But they talk about karma, the heaviness of karma. In fact, that's coming up here. Okay, so the weight, the karmic weight. So, intention, motivation, action, the weight of the action, the result, what's the end result of the action, and rejoicing in the result, and wisdom. So let's just break this down. Okay, and again, this is not the do-all, end-all, be-all. I want you to be really careful because when you go into DB and karma, they're going to break this out much further than I am. These are some high-level things. Okay, the weight of karma. Steve, you can jump in on this too. Okay, so we talked about karma and the intention being so important. Okay, so you have to have, in order for that karmic seed to be planted, okay, in order for that karmic seed to be planted, what is your intention? Why are you doing what you do? If your intention is good, if your intention and your motivation is good, that's positive, right? That's a positive karmic seed, all right? The action, if your actions are good and the weight of the action is going to make a difference too. So we're going to break some of this out. the result. What happened because of that action? What actually happened? Okay? What actually happened? And did you rejoice in the results? So this works for both positive and negative. So let's break it down. You kill an elephant versus you killing a mosquito, not thinking. Different motivations there, isn't it? This is kind of my duh. Okay, we'll go to some of the does. Okay? Killing a person is going to have much more karmic weight, much more karmic negative weight than killing a mosquito. Accidentally killing somebody versus purposefully, so you can see some of the intention. What are you thinking about? Why are you doing this? So you have to have the thought. You have to do the action. What is the result? What is the result? So now let's go through a few different things here. Because you were asking some good questions, okay? So this is why I'm going a little bit deeper. It's just for you, all right? So what's the actual result of that? So if it's that elephant died, that's a bad result, isn't it? That's a pretty duh, okay? And were you happy about it? Or did you regret it? So all of these things bring the different levels, the different weights of the karma. What is your motivation? What was your action? What's the result? And rejoicing in it. So let's do this. I'm a thief. I'm planning to rob you. I'm thinking about it. I'm planning it, and I'm going to do it. I actually do it. I rob you. I'm happy about it. I'm excited that I got your money. I ran out and tripped in the door, and all the money went flying, and all these people picked up the money, and they were all happy about it because they needed this money. So I can be a bad person and do everything bad, okay, and then you have to break down the results. So I can rejoice. So I say that word rejoice, but what am I doing? I'm rejoicing that I actually did the bad action, didn't I? Okay, so I have planned it. I did it. The result was there that he lost his money. Okay? So that's the result that I'm looking at, not what happened after that. The result is what happened to him. That's a result. All the things that kind of come afterwards, everybody kind of tends to keep going down that path. Stop right there. That result, the main result of that particular action. And again, I'm simplifying people. We are really simplifying this. This is a much deeper subject than what allows. So I think one of the things we were talking about was the giving an alcoholic a drink. Was that one of the, I think, I'm trying to remember what all we were saying and what some of the questions were. So your intention for giving this alcoholic a drink is to help him. It's not the wisest thing to do, though, is it? So this is where the wisdom, your intention may be good to help that person. Okay, so your intention is good. Your action is good because you're trying to help that person, but what is the result of that action? So this is where things get so, you know, much deeper. There's so many different levels there, so many different things going on. So this is where that wisdom comes from, the wisdom and compassion. Okay, and I think we all struggle with this. This is wisdom and compassion. I actually have this tattooed on my arms because it's one of the things that I try to work with all the time. Wisdom and compassion. You want to help, but if you don't know how to help wisely, are you really helping? This is the struggle. Is it the right thing to do? Is it the wrong thing to do? Where is that? There isn't a hard line. You're trying to work with this. Okay? There's an old Buddhist joke that you can't be just smart, and you can't be just nice. You have to be both. Because if you're only nice, you might not have the wisdom to truly help. And if you're only smart, you may not have the heart and the compassion to put that wisdom into action. So this is some deep stuff. Okay? So you really have to work with and understand the wisdom as you're trying to go through these karmic seeds. Now it's just like, okay, so I have this seed, and I'm going to plant that seed, and now in order for that seed to ripen, you have to water it, right? So these are those causes and conditions for that seed to come out, for that seed to happen. So, again, karma is a very, very big subject. I'm just trying to get you to understand and think. You're not going to get it in this class. I guarantee you. Don't expect to. I'm still working on this. Steve is taking classes online to work on this. Brian takes classes. Some of us have been working on this stuff for a long time, and right about the time we think we get it, it doesn't. Or we get it in some moments, and then we lose it. That happens to me all the time. It's like I'll have days where I'm really in it and feeling like it, and then all of a sudden life gets busy and my mind just kind of goes. And then it's like, wow, I'm so off. Okay, so you'll have that grasp. You ever feel like you get it? And then all of a sudden, oh, it's gone. I get that all the time. So you are not going to get this in this class, but a step maybe. Questions? Steve, if you want to add something to this, you go for it.
You're fine.
So... is this making a little bit of sense? Is this helping a little bit?
Kind of.
What questions? Yeah, please.
So in other words, what you're saying is you're taking everything you learn in life because of your regionality, your culture, your Western influences, the material things, everything, dump it. Walk 180 degrees to the forest and start from zero. That's basically what this is.
So, are you talking experientially or theoretically? So,
spiritually.
Internally. Yeah.
Everything. So it's not just one aspect.
Yeah, it's everything. So we'll talk about this a little bit the next class, okay, because you're getting into some of the deeper concepts and stuff. So we have these life experiences that we have to work with. We have this culture that we live in, so we have to learn how to work with it. We can't just throw it all away because then it's challenging. That's actually a very challenging way to do it. Because unless you know, it's doable, okay? You want to become a monk and you want to go off and live and do that? Completely doable. But go for it.
Well, I think that's part of where the wisdom comes in, too, is the compassion. I mean, we can't go out and gather all the homeless people and bring them home with us. And so there has to be a middle way. There has to be a common sense. But as we were talking earlier, His Holiness often is talking about the middle way, and that's how the Buddha came to these teachings, was the middle way between the two extremes. And so hopefully that will develop some wisdom and know that that's where we're trying to go.
Yeah, that's perfect. So you have to be aware of all of the different cultures and stuff, because that's where the perspectives come from. That's where some of the different views come from and the different minds come from. And I think to be open to those different viewpoints and those different perspectives is what allows us to have a better picture. It's like I said, if you ever get a chance, Geshe Gelug is traveling right now. And won't be back until like December, because he goes and he teaches at other centers and stuff. But it's always amazing to me when somebody will ask him a question about things that he just culturally doesn't have an awareness of, because he comes from, you know, a Tibetan monastery in India. So he doesn't understand, you know, kids playing Nintendo and PlayStation and the anger that they're feeling over some of these things. He doesn't even know what they are. So there's your cultural, trying to understand just because of a cultural perspective. But to try to think differently, to try to work with your mind in a way that may be absolutely new, is that, you know, for want of a better phrase, thinking outside of the box. If you change your perspective, you can change your mind. If you don't change your perspective, nothing's going to change. So you have to be open to these new thoughts. You have to squeeze your brain, as Lama Yeshe says. Squeeze your brain. Think. Again, don't just believe these things because I'm saying them. Don't believe these things because the Buddha said them. You've got to work. Squeeze your brain. It's it's hard. And sometimes my brain, my mind gets tired. And that's when you either have a little bit of self-compassion and give yourself a break, or you force yourself into, because I really want to learn this. Question.
What is happiness for Buddhism? What is happiness?
Okay, what is happiness?
How they define happiness.
So, from a Buddhist perspective, happiness is defined in many ways as freedom from suffering. Okay? What is happiness? From a Buddhist perspective, they will define it as freedom from suffering. That sounds kind of funny, doesn't it, to us? But think about it. Just take a minute and really think about it. If, what is happiness? What is it, what would it be to you?
That I want to know. Happiness for Buddhism is something personal, or is has to be something very general?
Okay, so let's go there for a minute. So it must be personal, because this is a personal, this is about your mind. It's not about anybody else's mind. So it has to be very personal. Okay? So it's yours. The general side of it, okay, to take you that step further, just because we're just talking. Okay? So for myself, okay, it's freedom of suffering for myself, but with that Mahayana mind of, you know what, I really can't be truly happy until everybody else is free from suffering too. So that's taking it to a general point for me. But happiness from a Buddhist perspective is freedom from suffering. Everybody in this room wants to be free from suffering, wouldn't you say? Everybody on this planet would love to be free from suffering. If they didn't have pain, if they didn't have hurts, if they didn't have, you know, they weren't getting bombed, if everybody had food to eat, okay, what is going to keep them free from suffering? And everything from the physical freedom from suffering to the mental freedom from suffering. Okay, if you were free from suffering, isn't that happiness? Might be, it's one very good definition of it.
And the opposite of that is a good explanation for the suffering is getting what you don't want and wanting things you don't have. And so in the training of our mind, it's to be happy with or be satisfied with what we have and not want what we don't have. I mean, that's the way it's often explained to me.
Yep. So, and one good way to put that again, okay, food analogies. Okay, so you're at the restaurant and you order chocolate cake and they bring carrot cake. How upset do people get? Well, we're out of chocolate cake, so you can have the carrot cake. It's becoming attached to, well, I got to have chocolate cake. You know, it's like, well, carrot cake might be good too. So,
when you say that you have to be happy with what you have, some people don't have food. Some
That's
people
right.
don't have home. How can they be happy with what they have?
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. Okay. I know a lot of people that do not have a lot of things. Okay? And some of them are the happiest people I know. Now, would they like to have all the food? Would they like to just at least have the basic subsistence of life? Of course. Everybody deserves that. But don't you know people that are suffering from cancer that are still happy people? Don't you know people that don't have a lot of stuff are still happy people? So the happiness is truly a state of mind. It's not a state of possessions. Now, is it sad for them that they're going without food and stuff? Yeah, but their basic happiness level, I know a lot of people that don't have things that are happier than people that do have things. And I'm not talking about those that are suffering from, you know, well, actually, I am. I'm talking about a lot of different people like that. I know people, I'm a cancer survivor. I know a lot of people that had cancer that, you know what, they were happy. They were peaceful in their thought process. You know, I think I manage it fairly well most of the time. I know a lot of people that have a lot of things. I know a lot of people that have a lot of money, and they have a lot of things, and they're not happy. They're not as happy as some of the people that I... But I would honestly say that I probably have more people that have less possessions that are happier than the people that I know that have more possessions. So...
I'm sorry, but this is not about possessions
exactly.
or material things. This is about spiritual connection and spiritual awakening.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. That's the way I am approaching it.
Yeah, and that is. But we have a lot of people that's part of how, especially in this society, especially in this Western society, that's how a lot of people tend to think. And it's not wrong. It's people are learning. So it is. It is definitely about that philosophy again. So it's, but we tend to think, especially in this society, about possessions. We just do. And if we had everybody, if everybody could live with the basic subsistence, okay, so that we didn't have homeless, so that we didn't have this stuff, I think that would be an easier conversation. But right now we do have a lot of people that don't have. And we're not even as bad as the third world countries. So that's always going to be, I think, a big question that has to take part until we're all at that level that we don't. If we all lived in Finland and got, you know, the way that they're doing things right now, I'm interested to see how that works. So they're going to give everybody a basic subsistence. And so once everybody has that, because it's easier to work on your spiritual mind when you have enough. Okay, we're talking about not having a lot, but when you have enough. And that's actually what a great segue here to, actually, let's go through this. So what are you planting, flowers or weeds? You have a choice of what you plant in your mind. This is those karmic seeds. We did this. I'm going to go, let's go into this precious human rebirth. That's what we're talking about. And that's a great segue to this. The precious human rebirth. From a Buddhist standpoint, a human rebirth can provide ideal conditions for practicing and improving our minds, an ideal balance of leisure and suffering, and opportunity and motivation. Okay, so we're actually talking about this very thing that you were just saying. So the precious human life, because we're born human, we have the opportunity to practice. We have the opportunity to have a spiritual life. We have the opportunity to work with our mind. Okay? We here in this country are sitting here at Kadampa Center talking about Buddhism and talking about the Dharma. Okay? There are some that don't have that opportunity. Syria. I can guarantee you they're not sitting around a Buddhist temple talking about the Dharma. They may be in their basements talking about some of this stuff, but, you know, they're living a much more challenging life. The people in Nepal have been dealing with all of the earthquakes. So, but we're human, so we can at least talk about that. If we have the basic subsistence level, once you have that covered, then it's easier to work on your spiritual level. So we talk about the 18 conditions. Again, Tibetan Buddhists, we have lists for everything, okay? So we have 18 conditions, 8 leisures or freedoms. These include freedom from being born in other realms, hell realm, animal realm, God realm. We're not going to go into that too much. Freedom from being born at a time when the Buddha did not appear or in a place where there is no spiritual activity. We also have 10 endowments or richnesses. These include being born human, being born in a religious country, being born with a well-functioning body and mind, fully able to understand the teachings and to practice, and being born at a time when a Buddha has appeared and taught. So again, this precious human life, the way that you can think about this is picture this ocean. This is the way that it was explained to me. So you have this vast ocean, okay? They will call it a yoke. I'm going to call it a life preserver. If you have a little life preserver in the middle of the ocean on these waves, okay, the Atlantic Sea, whatever, okay, great big ocean. You have a sea turtle that is going to come from the depths and come up to get some air, and he's going to put his head right through that life preserver. He's going right in the middle of that life preserver. What are the chances of that? That's what they say that our chances are of this precious human rebirth. And when you think, well, what? There's 7 billion people on this planet, okay? So think about how many insects, I mean, billions, trillions of insects. Think about the animals. Think about all of these microbials, because a sentient mind is the ability to move, to take action. Okay? Also in Buddhism, it might not necessarily be on this planet. Oh, mind-blowing. So this precious human life that we have, where we actually have the opportunity to study, is very rare and very precious. And again, we're thinking here in the center. Look at us here in the center that we have this opportunity. Geshe Gelug always talks about the fact that, so we talked about karma. So in order to have this life that we have now, he says all of us must have been so generous in our past lives. We must have been so generous in our past lives because we're living in America with the land of plenty. We have clean water and clean air. Most don't have that. We're sitting in air-conditioned comfort with lights. He said that we all had to have been so very generous in our past lives to have this opportunity that we have, just for those people sitting in this room. So to be given the opportunity to have this, I mean, what a wonderful gift that whoever was holding this life for us and this mind for us before did. And we want to create that opportunity to pass it further. Yes.
I had trouble even with last week about that being born in America or living in America or living as a human is a karmic thing, because I think there are so many other countries they have opportunities.
Absolutely.
And there are so many people who cannot have complete body, you know, as it says,
yes,
well functioning. I think they still have their capability or mind that is
absolutely
working extraordinary. So I just don't want to agree.
Well, I guess I appreciate what you're saying, because, and I don't mean to say it as in that we're the only ones, because actually Buddhism is not an American, okay? It came from elsewhere. So we're just sitting here. So this is why I'm doing the analogy of we're here, okay? But there are people in other countries that have opportunities. We are learning from the people in the other countries, okay? Because Buddhism is not an American philosophy.
Okay, good.
Okay? Yeah, so it's just that we're sitting here, so that's the way I'm talking about it from a very here point of view. If I was sitting in Japan, I'd be talking about it from that. If I was sitting in China, I'd be talking about it from there. But I happen to be sitting in America. So, but it is. And not only, so you make the point of, you know, this little perfect human world, there are many other minds, you know, that are, you know, Stephen Hawking has a phenomenal mind, okay? So again, I'm talking about the mind, okay? The outward, whatever, is in many ways immaterial to me. Makes sense? But I love that you pointed it out, so that we can just clarify. Does that make sense? Does that help? Okay. So the Buddhist view of death. How many people, I think I asked this already, but I'm going to ask it again. How many people have ever seen a dead body in this room? Okay, so that's a huge amount. Normally I get a third of that. Okay, was it in a hospital? How many saw the dead body at home? Okay, even that's huge. Okay, so here in the West, and again, because this is most of the minds that I'm working with, we usually fight everything that we see about death. Death is not a conversation that we have. We try to avoid it, in fact. Our entire culture here in the West is based on young, not aging, okay? It's even our, you know, commercials, everything you see, we just don't talk about death. It's not in our everyday conversation. Since we're working on our mind stream, and since we believe in rebirth, since we believe that we are the carriers of our mind and that we work towards setting up that next life, looking at death from a Buddhist perspective is very, very different. We actually have death meditations to become more familiar with. I've done these death meditations, okay? I had two near-death experiences with cancer, a couple of other things. So becoming familiar, we fear the unknown. We fear the unknown. That's a fair statement, wouldn't you say? We're afraid of things because we don't know them. Most Americans, you would probably say, would fear death because we don't really know it. We don't have a lot of familiarity with it. We actually have death meditations here in the Buddhist practice. The Dalai Lama, I've heard, does this meditation 6 times a day. Okay? So part of that is because when that time comes, and it will, there isn't a single person in this room that's going to live forever. When that time comes, we actually have the belief that we can work with the mind so that you can not only not be afraid of it, but that you can actually go through the process in a manner that helps you to set up that next rebirth. Okay? Some of the deep, deep Buddhist practitioners are able to do this. They can work with their minds to set up that next rebirth. And just working with your mind, I just went through this recently with a very good friend who passed away. And he did. He's a very, very deep practitioner, and it was as hard of an experience as it is. It was beautiful, too, because he was working with his mind the entire time. But it's trying to become familiar with it. And again, don't just, you know, believe this because I'm saying it. Go try them. You'll learn these. The first DB class, Mind and Its Potential, I think that is just wrapping up now. I believe that Robbie talks about the meditation. Death meditation.
He does the death meditation.
He's
a physician and talks you through how each system of the body shuts down, which system shuts down first, what that'll feel like. We turn the lights out and turn them really down and lay it on the floor. And he warned the class that if you become uncomfortable or become frightened or it's disturbing, to leave. But I found it enlightening.
I love it, actually.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's funny as this sounds. Honestly, when you go through it, it helps you to understand the actual process. And so then you just don't, because the more you're familiar you become with something, then the less afraid of it that you are. So that's going to bring me to another practice that I want you to do, your homework. Okay. Tomorrow morning, as soon as you can remember, whether it's with your first cup of coffee, with the moment your eyes wake up, I don't care. As soon as you can remember, I want you to think, I'm going to die today at 5 p.m. I'm going to die today at 5 p.m. So, like I said, as soon as you can remember, say, oh, that's right, Sandy wants me to die today at 5. Okay, so how would you live your life differently if you thought you were going to die? Now, this is a practice. You still have to go to work. You still have to function. You can't just take the day off and go on vacation. Okay? If you were going to die, how would you act? How would you be? Would you maybe be a little bit nicer to people? Would that grass look a little greener? That sky look a little bluer? Would you stop and smell the flowers maybe on your walk to work? Would you be more aware? How will your mind be if you think that you're going to die? Okay, so this is an awareness exercise. Okay, it's not real. Please, nobody take this any further than that. This is an exercise just to see how would your mind work if you thought you weren't going to be here. Would you be a little bit nicer? It's just an awareness, so just try it. Okay, and then when 5 o'clock comes, I want you to rejoice that you're actually not going to die and think, wow, and now I have another opportunity. I have another day. I've got another day to work on my mind. I have another opportunity because every day is a fresh opportunity. So this is just a practice.
Cindy, I wrote it on a sticky note and stuck it to the mirror in the bathroom in case I forgot. When I
he
woke
was
up.
In this class with me 2-3 years ago.
Yes, yeah.
He sat back right over there and smiled the whole time. So, yeah, so you did that.
Oh, absolutely. Because I knew I'd forget, you know, but when you go in to brush your teeth, there's a sticky note, you're going to die today at 5. And I say, oh, okay.
So it's working with that.
I enjoyed breakfast. I looked forward to lunch. I smiled to everyone. I waved. People thought, I'm sure they thought I was crazy, you know, sitting at the light and waving to everyone. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was very... This concept is important because we're not getting out of this alive. I mean, when we're born, that first breath we take is moving us closer to death. But in our culture, we all fear it. I mean, it's the great mystery to life. But there's no escaping it. And so our attachment to this life is what causes us to fear death and suffer from it and have this anxiety. My father's 86, and he's terrified. I mean, he's got all these illnesses. He's in a rest home, and he's scared to death. And, I mean, my heart aches for him. That's just not the way to die. This is a very important part of this practice.
Yeah. So it's just try it. Just see. And try to be aware. Again, this is about mind awareness. So it's just how would you act differently if you thought you weren't going to be here tomorrow? Okay? How would your day be different? And this is, again... I wish that both Geshe-la and Geshe Sangpo were here. This is not a depressing practice. This is some of the most freeing and motivating and inspiring stuff that you can do because it frees you from some of the stress and worry that we are just have slammed on us all the time. So this is a very joyful... Buddhism is so joyful to me. Okay, it's completely, it's that thing, turning that Four Noble Truths around. Okay, that's the way I feel about this. Some of the happiest people I know are practicing Buddhists. So it's just try it. Even though we talk about death and dying and suffering, well, we're talking about how to get rid of it. Okay, so that's worth working on for me. Okay, we actually went a little bit longer than I thought. So I'm going to give you the choice. We can stop. And we can try the analytical meditation if you want to. Or I can keep going with some more where we can get in some more definitions and some the next things with the three scopes. Or I can just hold off on that and try to talk fast next time. But if you want to try the analytical meditation, or do we want to keep this learning process? So anybody that wants to try analytical meditation, raise your hand. Okay, it sounds like everybody wants to go that route. Okay. Okay. And I'm sorry to try to rush everybody through, but I just think that you guys might like this. Okay, I'm going to do an analytical meditation, and I'm going to actually give you a real-world application. This is called equanimity. This is called an equanimity meditation. This is from the book How to Meditate by Kathleen McDonald. It is also one of the handouts in the Meditation 101 class. And I've done this meditation for years. I still do this meditation. So I'm going to give you a specific time that many, many years ago, I work in the media world, okay? I've got a communications company. And so I have to deal with a lot of different people, a lot of different kind of vendors, a lot of different kind of things. And I had this one vendor that I did not like. I had problems with this vendor. I did not like dealing with him. I did not like working with him. I'd been having to deal with him for, you know, a couple of years with different clients that used him for other things. And I just didn't like him. I didn't hate him. I didn't like him. I did not enjoy working with him. And it was a problem. It was affecting my work. I just didn't like it. And so this meditation came across my awareness one time, and I started working with it, and I liked it. And so one time before I called this client or this vendor, I actually did this meditation, okay? And I used him as the guy I didn't like. And so I'm going to walk you through this whole thing. And I used this. I used this specifically before I made the phone call to this guy. And it worked. So my tone was different when I called him because I was in a better place. And so when I called him, I can't change his mind. I can change my mind. And just by changing my mind and making my tone different, he responded a little bit differently than he normally did. So all of a sudden we were able to have a fairly good conversation for probably the first time in 2 years because I changed my mind. And I kept that. I have used this because there's always times when you've got to deal with somebody that you don't particularly like. Hate is a really strong word. But I have actually used this in real-world application several times because I had such amazing results the first time. That's the difference between theoretical knowledge and experiential knowledge. I tried this. It worked for me. Okay, so this is real-world application of this meditation in practice. So let's give it a shot and see. Okay, get yourself in the meditation posture, comfortable, and seriously go through that 7-point meditation posture. Really work with it. Focus your attention on your breath, and I want you to use one of the various breathing meditations. Let's use counting the breath since we've done that one. I want you to work with that for a couple of minutes. I'm going to be quiet. We're going to set our motivation, and I want to generate the strong intention to do this meditation in order to overcome the self-centered bias and judgments and develop the mind of perfect equanimity and balance toward others. That's our motivation. Now I want you to do the 10, counting to 10, counting the breaths, and I'm going to be quiet for a couple of minutes to let you get there. So as you're doing the counting, and if you're really working with it well, and you focus and you've got the concentration going and you've let the rest of the world fall away, you're not worrying about what you have to do later, you're not trying to rethink the things that I've talked about in this class, you're just focused on just your breathing. So we've focused in, we've calmed our minds, we brought it down to just the breath. And now we're going to go into the actual meditation. Imagine the space in front of you. Three people. Someone you like. Someone you dislike. And someone you feel indifferent towards. So I'm going to give you a minute to try to think of those people. So I've done this where I just imagine just that white, seamless background. And one person comes walking in, somebody that I like, somebody that I love and care for. Then I have somebody that I don't really know, that lady at the post office. I don't know her. Okay, I kind of feel neutral to her. She seems nice enough. I don't know her. One way or the other, I really have no feelings one way or the other. Just pick somebody neutral that you are aware of, a secretary, you know, somebody that works someplace, somebody that you've seen enough to that you recognize them, but you don't know them. And then pick somebody that you don't like. Okay, pretty much none of us, I think, hates people, but somebody that you really get frustrated easily with, somebody that you're having a problem with right now, maybe somebody you work with. So you've got these three people in your mind. First, focus on your friend, your loved one. And allow your feelings for that person to arise strongly. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. That is a person that's good to you and fulfills your needs and wishes. Feel how you really want this person to be happy. And identify yourself with these good feelings. Just stick on that person that you care for, that you like. And allow those feelings to arise with that person. Feel how you feel with that person. Now shift your attention to your enemy. That person that you dislike and who is not kind to you. Who does not satisfy your needs. Who annoys you, makes you angry, who hurts you. Look at that person carefully and look carefully at the feelings that you have about this person. Finally, shift your attention to this so-called stranger, this person that you barely know, you don't really like or dislike them, and look carefully at that person and note those feelings of indifference. You just don't really care one way or the other. You don't know them. Now consider and recognize that the nature of your relationships with each of these three people and the labels that you have put on each of them are really based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of people in the past who have been your friend but then became your enemy or just did not stay friends with you anymore. They did something wrong that hurt you and you're not friends with them anymore. Maybe think of people in your life that you're just not close to anymore. Think about people that maybe you didn't like before and now you do like them. Something has changed in that relationship and now you have a good relationship with them. And all of your friends or these enemies, they were all strangers at one time. So remember when you first met them. They were strangers then and became your friends or became your enemy. But they pretty much started as strangers. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent. It's just what the situation is at the current time. Now move your attention back to your friend. And imagine a situation that might cause that friendship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you and experience the resentment and anger and hurt that you would feel in such a situation. Do you still feel warm and friendly feelings toward that person? Do you still wish him or her well and want that person to be happy? And where is your friend now? Remember that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted. Recognize how easily this person could cease to be your friend now, just as you've imagined. Think to yourself that there is no sound reason for feeling kind and loving toward only the friend of this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. Now move your attention to the present enemy, this person you are having a problem with. Imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become closer, a common interest, a word of praise or kindness from them. Look at that person and your feelings toward them carefully. Are your feelings softening, becoming warmer? You can learn to feel warmly toward your enemies. This has happened before and it will happen again. Why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is definitely enemy? Now move your attention to the stranger and imagine how one act of kindness or anger from that person could immediately turn him or her into a friend or an enemy. There is no inherent, definite stranger there. There is no sound reason for the feelings of indifference that we hold on to. Remember that your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers to you beforehand, and this enemy could become a friend or an enemy now. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you. Think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. And it's only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels of friend, enemy, and stranger that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and stranger all want happiness just as much as you do. In this respect, we are all equal. Also, everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial, based only on our mistaken and narrow self-centered views. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. None of this means that we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. And naturally, we feel closer to some people and are wise to keep our distance from others. This is not in any way contradictory to the meditation. The point of this meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help us or harm us at this point in time, and to see that the labels that we put on others are often arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. Finally, let's dedicate this positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Bring your attention back to the room. Now, I shortened that a little bit. Okay. So, y'all see those car commercials where that car drives on and that seamless wall is white? So all you see is the car, and it doesn't look like there's a sharp wall or anything. I have created that where my people actually walk onto that stage. However you want to do this meditation to where it works for you, and then take it as deep as you want to. But if you think about that person that you don't like, and you think about, again, make up the stories. He has a family. He's working so hard and he's got to go home and take care of his mom. Maybe he's feeling, you know, is very short-tempered because he's under a bunch of stress in the work. We don't know what they're, you know, walk a mile in their shoes type of thing. Whatever you can do that's going to soften your heart a little bit toward that person that you're frustrated with, and to get that feeling of love and compassion that you have for this person over here to be shared, we're trying to do this equanimity. Everybody deserves that. I'm not saying love this person less. Love doesn't have the limits. So if you can bring some of that feeling of love and compassion that you have for this person over, that's part of what helps me to balance. So we're 8:35, a little bit over time. I wish we could talk more because this is good conversation. I hope I didn't confuse anybody too much. Thank you all for coming. I truly appreciate it. Again, if you find any benefit from these classes and what's going on, we survive on the generosity of people. Check out, go to our website and check out these two people that are coming. They can explain this stuff so much better than I can. And we'll talk more about everything later. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have any questions, let me know. That's my email up there. I've got one quick meeting after this class. But thank you. If anybody's got any questions, let me know. And I'll see you next week. Last class next week.